Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast and our match report from Forest defeat on the South Coast as they lost away 1-0 at Brighton and Hove Albion. It was a game that I suppose many supporters were hopeful for, given Brighton's recent struggles in Europe and in the Premier League, and with Forest's positive display against Liverpool. But in the end, it was a very underwhelming game from a Forest perspective. They didn't really impose themselves onto the game and conceded midway through the first half after a controversial free kick was awarded. We'll get onto that later. And Pascal Gross's delivery went off Matt Sells. He failed to punch it and it deflected in off Andrew Obamadeli. Forest couldn't respond despite some decent chances and lost the game 1-0. We're recording on Sunday night. I'm your host, George. I've just got back in from the Amex Stadium and I'm joined by Adam for this one. How are you, Adam?
It's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, again, like you mentioned, after the good performance against Liverpool, you want to build on that. You know, Brighton were in Europe on Thursday night. You maybe thought there'd be tired legs out there and you could take advantage of that. So it's just bitterly disappointing, isn't it, again?
Yeah, it's not brilliant. We'll drive straight in then and we'll look at the team news because that was a big talking point about the game and something that really affected how Forest played. They made a couple of changes from the Liverpool defeat. Danilo and Chris Wood came in and Hudson-Odoi and Elanga were replaced. So Matt Sells played in goal. There was a back four of Nico Williams, Andrew Omobamadeli, Murillo and Harry Toffolo, Danilo and Ryan Yates in midfield with Dominguez and Origi on the wings, Gibbs White in behind Chris Wood up front, Turner Sangare, Kouyaté, Awonyu, Hudson-Odoi, Felipe, Niakate, Elanga and Bolly on the bench. Now, that came through and I was absolutely baffled, to be honest, about the team news. Brighton coming off being defeated in Europe in midweek and you're thinking, you know, they're going to make changes but they'll have tired legs. Forest can play Elanga, play Hudson-Odoi and get at them with pace, but there was no pace in the side at all from Nuno from the start. Williams was our only attacking threat really down the right and Toffolo down the left, and it was Adam playing Dominguez on the wing when you don't need to. It was baffling when you saw the team news.
I've said this before with the Dominguez thing, I don't see him as a winger. I think he's such a talented midfielder. I don't understand, because not only are you having a position out there where, you know, you've got Hudson-Odoi on the bench, you've got Elanga on the bench. You know, it's not just that. It's the fact that you've got a player that's more effective in the middle. And it's something we talked about just before we started recording. There's this habit of trying to shoehorn players in because they're playing well and putting them into positions that they're not comfortable in.
Yeah.
If you want to play Dominguez, just play Dominguez and Danilo. Or if you want to play a bit, you know, play Dominguez and Yates or play Dominguez and Sangare. You don't have to shoehorn him in out wide. It's confusing. And I understand it if it's a cohesion thing and it's a, you know, we've played well this way, we've played well with him being out there and the system works better because he plays out there. But it's not been like that at all. And it's just really confusing.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying because Dominguez playing out of the wing worked when he needed to cover that position. But when you've got two ready-made wingers on the bench, it just does not make sense to play Dominguez there over him, especially when, like I say, they play a centre-back at right-back. So why not try and exploit that? But we'll stay with the manager and touch on his substitutes throughout the game. So Elanga and Sangare came on after 60, Hudson-Odoi won the after 70, and Kouyaté for Gibbs White with 5 to go. That was what frustrated me the most. Forest were 1-0 down at this point and they had the most possession that they had throughout the game, obviously with Brighton clinging on and Forest trying to go for the equaliser. Gibbs White, Forest's most creative player, gets substitute for Cheku Kouyaté, who is the opposite. And he's a midfielder, he's a decent player. And I thought the only way he could come on was if Chris Wood was being replaced because maybe he was tired. But Kouyaté comes on for Gibbs White, Forest's most creative player. That was strange. I think Sangare coming on, I can't see. He's a very weird player. Reminds me, and I was talking to my mate on the train back, of Paul Pogba, because he looks like a great footballer. He does these nice passes, but he just goes missing and the game seems to pass him by. So a very strange substitutions throughout from Nuno as well as the selection, Adam.
Yeah, and I think that taking Gibbs White off, being your most creative player, for a player that you look at that sub and you're probably thinking as a fan, you probably thought in the ground, like, why are we, it almost looks like we're trying to shore it up to not concede another one rather than get an equaliser. Is this unbelievable amount of respect given to the opponent? And I mean, for me, you've got a situation where you've got Hudson-Odoi and Elanga, who, look, I don't think we've had a player this season that's probably been, that you can say honestly, that's been consistent throughout the whole season. They've been brilliant. You know, I think every player's had their, you know, purple patches and, you know, in and out of the team. But I just think Elanga and Hudson-Odoi out wide starting today, and to bring them on at that point in the game and it not change anything as well is fairly worrying in itself. But you start with that pace from the start, you catch them on the break, you know, you catch a team that, like we say, have played in Europe on Thursday night. You know, we've had the bigger rest. It all just seems strange to me. I'm still trying to figure it out. And I mean, Sangare is a really weird one, because when we signed him, obviously, you know, I was absolutely buzzing. I was so excited. I didn't think we'd get him. I thought he'd go to a team that's probably already in the top 10 established. And I was so happy to get him, and it just hasn't really worked so far. And I don't think it's all his fault. I think, you know, he had a difficult start when he came in. Then we had AFCON, then the manager changed, and he's come back from AFCON with an injury. It's been hard for him to kind of get that really good run in the team, but it's weird. It's so strange. And I do feel like he will come good. And I feel like I would like to say that Dominguez and, you know, Sangare is probably our strongest DM partnership in that 4-2-3-1, but I don't think it is at the minute. I think it's probably, you're probably looking at Dominguez and Danilo at the minute, and I think that's probably just where we're at. And it's, I don't know. To bring this very long point back to the team, it's so confusing, and the confusion then turns to frustration with the fan base, and I think that's where we're at.
And just lastly on Nuno, and you touched on the fan base there, there doesn't really seem to be a bond between the manager and the fans at the minute, because under Steve Cooper, we know, and throughout me going to Forest away games over the past, I've been going for what, 7-8 years in away ends, every single manager has had their name in a chant pretty much straight away. Even I remember an away game against Reading when between managers, and we had Simon Ireland as an interim manager, and we were singing his name. Yeah. I can't remember hearing one Nuno chant from the fans. And it's always going to be hard following a cult hero like Steve Cooper. And he was probably never going to replicate the love between the fans that Cooper had. But do you think that Forest need to stay up for Nuno to gain that love? Because it's just not there at the minute.
Do you know what I don't understand about Nuno? I mean, this is probably the strangest thing. You know, with Wolves, he did have such an affiliation to the fans. I mean, like, they absolutely loved him. They used to win a game. He used to go over, you know, to the fans and give it large, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And it's like, it almost seems, and maybe I'm being a bit harsh on Nuno here, but it almost seems like, I don't know if he has tried hard enough to maybe have that bond with the fans. I think it goes both ways. I'm surprised that the fans haven't made a chant or started something, but I don't think the fans are completely convinced on Nuno. And I think that, for me, he has improved the way we've played football. Absolutely. That we're playing a better brand of football. We look generally better in games, but that has to translate to results. And when it's not translating to results, and we have been so unlucky, but unfortunately, unlucky doesn't cut it in football. Managers lose their jobs, even if they're unlucky. And I think if we go down, I don't think he even stays to get the opportunity to bring us back up.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. So we'll steer it back to the Brighton game then. We're going to get Tom's thoughts as he was walking back to the car. I saw him on the way out as I was walking. He was in the T&E or the block next to me, and he didn't look very pleased. So let's hear what he's had to say.
Just walking back to the car now, and yet again, it's another defeat on the road for Forest. I think that's a bit on Nuno's team selection was very iffy and was very passive in the first half, was poor with the ball, was poor out of possession. Divock Origi's had a chance in the first half straight at Verbruggen, should be doing a lot better than the goal what we conceded. Just the catalogue of errors, really. Amabamadeli, he's a bit in no man's land in terms of what to do when the ball comes in and Matt Sells just flaps at it. Then basically not a lot happened in the first half. Then second half, we show a bit more urgency and a bit better with the ball, but again, we're chasing the game. Divock Origi's had another chance where he's basically just blasted the ball into the English channel. It's pretty awful. He's got to hit the target from there, and it's awful, especially from a Premier League striker. And they just kept us at arm's length, and it seemed that we were the team who's played in midweek and not Brighton, who's been to Roma and back in their Europa League tie against Roma. And yeah, we didn't really lay a glove on them second half. It was like a lot of huffing and puffing. Changes did make a difference, but yet again, we don't lay a glove on yet another team who, in my eyes, were there for the taking. So then the challenge from Moda on Wilms, I think it was. It's a horrific challenge. And how he's not been sent off for that, I will never know. And seriously, what's the point of being in this league anymore? The levels of corruption absolutely stink. Obviously, they had the fallout last week. We've had decisions what haven't gone against us pretty much all season. And that it's a high challenge. He's out of control. It's above. He's hit the ankle, his ankle and everything. And it's honestly, it's an awful challenge. And you just get a yellow card for that. And it just absolutely reeks this league of corruption. We made a couple of changes. I mean, Awani come on, Sangare come on, Kiarte come on, which was a bit of a strange decision to bring on him on, because he got replaced by with Morgan Gibbs-White going off. And I just think you lost all creativity then, and Brighton just basically kept us at arm's length. They kept it in the corner for a good couple of minutes and just basically killed the game and everything. But we'll go again against Luton next week, and we've got to be bang at it, because at the moment we cannot defend set pieces to save our lives, and they're going to be bang at it next week in terms of, because that's one of their strengths, especially with Carlton Morris and Adebayo, etc. So yeah, it's a must win next week.
Yeah, I think nicely summed up by Tom. I've got to say, me and Adam both didn't listen to that, so we didn't know if we'd have to do some expletives. But luckily, I think that passed the test. But we'll get on to the game and look at the first half then. And Forest didn't actually start too badly. We looked threatening on the counter. We were always going to, maybe, like we've alluded to, if we had Elanga and Hudson-Odoi on the pitch, we would have done more. But then we started to allow Brighton to settle, and that proved fatal, really. They pressured Forrest throughout the early stages and forced Sales into a couple of good saves. Firstly, after 11 minutes, he kept out Baleba, I think. He actually had a really good game for them. When I spoke to a Brighton fan on the bus and the train back about him, he had a really good game. Sales kept him out. And then Moda had a headed chance that was saved by the keeper after about 15 minutes from a free kick. But he couldn't do it all because Forrest conceded, as we've mentioned, on 29 minutes after a free kick. We'll talk about the awarding of the free kick later on in the pod, just after the break. We're going to have a whole section about the refereeing incidents. But on the free kick itself, it was given, swung in by Pascal Gross, and Sells' poor attempt of a punch went straight against Andrew Armabamadeli and into the net. So Adam, Sells ought to have done a lot better with that after having a very good start to the game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, on the extended highlights that I saw, he did make some really good saves. And when I was putting down my notes to talk about, I'd put down on my notes to say, oh, Sells made some really good saves. He did really well. And then I saw the goal and then I went, all right, okay, I probably have to chuck some of them notes out then, because he's kind of ruined it a bit now. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. I mean, there's a lot of people defending him online saying that it's slippery conditions, the ball's wet, all this sort of stuff. I'm not having any of that. I'm not having that. I mean, punching the ball away is basics. It's 101. You know, if you don't feel like you can catch it, I understand. But that is basic. That is absolutely basic, that he has to get rid of that somehow. If he gets rid of it by punching it, he gets rid of it by punching it. If he gets rid of it by catching it or, you know, whatever, that's fine. But you cannot do that. And it's so, so basic. And it's so frustrating as well, because I think as Forest fans, we've had to endure a lot goalkeeper-wise this season, and Sells kind of looked a little bit like he might not be the answer, but he might be the stopgap for at least a little bit. And yeah, it's disappointing. It's really disappointing goal to concede.
And goalkeepers, like you said, we thought that we'd buried that hatchet, but it reared its ugly head once again. But another thing you can add, if you listen to the big pod, we spoke about it, that referees, goalies and injuries have all cost Forest the most this season. But I think now we're starting to add not taking the chances that we've had, because we've not now scored in the last three games, but we've had chances in all three of those games to convert big time. I mean, Divock Origi has two huge chances throughout the 90 minutes. Both of them, Morgan Gibbs-White plays him in. And the first half, he turns on halfway, slots him in down the right wing, and Origi has loads of time, runs onto it, into the box. And then Verbruggen does well. The angle's closed. and Origi hits it straight into Verbruggen's legs. And then he gets a very similar chance in the second half, if not better, running a bit more central. Gibbs White plays him through again. And this time he gets into the box and does the opposite. Instead of low stretch at the keeper, he balloons it, as Tom said, basically into the sea. And that's such a poor miss from Divock Origi. And then Forest's actual best sort of chance they had of the game was actually through Chris Wood. And it wasn't an opportunity that should have been the best chance of the game, because Origi's by far were better opportunities. But Wood made a good fist of it. Gibbs White lifted a ball in towards the box in the second half, towards the back post. It went over both centre-backs. And his left-footed shot from the left of the box was saved by the goalkeeper. So I hope that you can really blame Crystal for not scoring that. But for Divock Origi, he's got to take one of those chances, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, if he feels the angle's been closed down too much, he could square it. I understand that Dunk was probably there, but the right ball across, he squares that. It's a tap-in for Wood, and it's you know, it's a goal. It's not an issue. The second one's just bad. It's really bad. I was teetering on saying unforgivable, but I think it's a bit harsh. But he's got to get it on target at least. I mean, at least the first one, look, it's a poor effort, but he gets it on target. I mean, the second one was just, it was a really, really poor effort. And it's a poor effort from a player that doesn't really lack a lot of confidence either. He's not the sort of player that you think, oh, he's just, you know, lacks the confidence. He's not that kind of player. So yeah, it's just really frustrating. And in a game where, you know, from what I've seen and what I've, you know, heard, understood, whatever, but again, it was fairly there for the taking if we had sort of gone into that extra gear to sort of create them more chances. But when you get those chances, you've got to take them. I did completely agree with you on the Chris Wood one, though. I mean, I don't want to say half chance, but he almost makes it more of a chance because it's at a really, really tight angle. Brilliant ball by Gibbs White, by the way. But yeah, it's a really tight angle. And if he scores that, it's absolutely clinical. You know, if he doesn't, you know, you kind of can't expect him to. But yeah, on a day where you don't create much, we talk more about them incidents.
Yeah, and just something on you said there. Brighton, I thought, throughout the game, were there for the taking. I thought they were poor, particularly second half. I mean, first half, we let them play a bit, but second half, they were abysmal. And often Forest make teams look better than they are, but we didn't even do that. Brighton didn't actually look anything special. But Forest, I just thought, lacked the intent to try and push for an equaliser. And I looked at it and I compared it to Luton yesterday. And instead, they were losing the game at Crystal Palace, but they kept fighting throughout stoppage time and they scored with pretty much the last minute of the game. And that just shows how much they wanted that. Whereas for the most of the injury time, for the 6 minutes that were added on, I believe it was 6 minutes, Forest, the ball was played in Brighton's half next to their corner flag. And they had one little flurry forward towards the end. And it didn't come to anything. So it was never going to come, Adam, the goal or the equaliser. It didn't look like anyway.
No, I mean, I actually watched the Palace-Luton game yesterday. And I mean, don't get me wrong, Luton were fairly fortunate. It was only 1-0. But they did fight and they did give it right until the end. And look, if you're talking about quality, we're a better team than Luton. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. Yeah. But I just think that if they're gonna want it more, I mean that has to concern you going into next week's game for sure. Anyway, that they might just want it a little bit more. And the strange thing about Nuno since he's come in is that one thing that we're actually good at under Nuno is scoring goals. Yeah. That has been something that we are good at. We are good at scoring goals, and now we've had United, Liverpool, and Brighton where we haven't scored a goal, and it's almost like he's overcorrected. Because we were leaking a lot of goals. Maybe he thought, all right, we need to shore up a little bit at the back. And now we've overcorrected and now we can't score. And like I say, I think that sometimes you can look at it and say unlucky. Against Liverpool, really unlucky. Against United, fairly unlucky as well. You know, we've had performances where we've gone, you know what, we didn't play that badly, probably deserve something out of that. And today, by the sound of it, that's not the case. And, you know, we'll come on to the referee later on, but there's only so much you can blame the referee for. You still need to perform as well. And if we're not doing that, then that's going to be a serious problem.
And you're right. It does seem like either we can't score and don't concede, or we score loads but concede loads. We've gone from losing, what was it, 3-2 to Newcastle, beating West Ham 2-0, and then 4-2 to Villa, to 3-1-0s in a row. And how you can go from one to the other, it's quite strange. And only things that could happen at Forest, I guess. But we're going to have a break and then we'll come on to the much-awaited refereeing decisions And I think we'll also look ahead to the Luton game at the weekend, which looks very, very important at the moment.
The 1865 Match Report.
We're pleased to announce that this episode of 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Forest fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. If you download the Green King Sport app, you won't just get 10% off all drinks anytime there's a match on the TV, but this month there's also free Guinness to be won and the chance to win one of six holidays. And you'll be supporting us here at 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. Now it's back to your podcast.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the 1865 match report from Forest defeat on the South Coast away at Brighton. We've spoke a lot about the performance and about the manager, but now it's time to touch on the refereeing decisions. And I don't think we want to become a moaning club about referees every single week, but it is every single week that we have decisions go against us. Let's just run through some of the appalling decisions that happened in the game today or yesterday as you're listening to it. So, firstly, I was quick to pick up on that the referee was very eager to book our players throughout the game, yet Brighton's fouls, he wasn't compensated for. It's only Forest that he was booking. And it just didn't seem right. It didn't seem fair, to be fair. Then for the goal that Brighton scored, I was on row two and I was just in front of the corner of the penalty area. So I was right behind that tackle. Andrew Omobamadeli, I forgot who it was on, but he slides in, he gets all of the ball that goes out for a throw-in and then barely touches the defender. He's already on a booking, and I'm surprised the referee didn't send him off, to be fair. But he definitely gets the ball. For me, that's not a foul. And I know the referee was the other side of it, so it could have looked like a foul. But that, for me, is not a foul. He got the ball. Then there's a murmur for offside, I think, for Ansu Fati from the goal, but I'm not too sure about that. And then the big talking point that most people will be talking about for the game, I'm sure Mark Clattenburg will have his say about that in the coming days, is Jakub Moda's challenge on Nico Williams. And he dives in there, as Tom mentioned earlier, two-footed. He goes with the first foot, then his second foot comes as he makes contact with Williams. And it's a good job Nico didn't have any sort of force on his right foot, because that could be a leg breaker. And everybody in the away end, and I think a lot of the home fans, probably accepted that's a red card. The referee took his yellow card out, then put it back in his pocket and waited for the melee to die down. Then he goes to his pocket and brandishes the yellow card. And then the VAR check comes along, which we all thought, right, it's given the yellow, VAR will send him off then. 90-second check, so clearly there's something wrong with it, and they don't even send the referee to the monitor. I mean, I don't think Forest would have scored now if they were still playing, even with the red card. But for these decisions every week, Adam, it's baffling how they can keep getting them wrong.
Yeah, I'm just lost for words. I mean, like you say, it does happen every week. And, you know, the video's obviously surfaced online, and all the comments are by Brighton fans as well, saying, no idea, it's not a red card. It's a horrible challenge. You know what? And I put it in my group chat. This does actually happen a lot when it's this sort of surface. You know when it's been raining? You know when it's like a horrible rainy football game, right? A lot of the time, referees' justification for decisions like this is the conditions. You have to take the conditions into effect. So a slide tackle looks worse in the rain than it does in the dry, right? There is that. And that's surely going to be the excuse they use. But I'm really trying to play devil's advocate here and clutch at some straws to try and find some sort of way why it wasn't a red card. And I just can't really. It's as clear as day as red. And if the ref doesn't see it, or if the ref doesn't get a clear view of it and he thinks it's a yellow, fine. That's why we have VAR. If it wasn't checked at all, we'd be annoyed. But I think I'm more annoyed that it was checked, because 90 seconds go by and they get every single angle of it. They get it in slow motion, all that sort of stuff. And by doing that, they have said, conclusively, we believe that is not a red card. That's what they've said. That is not a red card. End of story, not a red card. It's how baffling. Can you... I don't know how you can come to that summary. I honestly, it's embarrassing. And it's week after week after week. And we've had apology after apology. And I've no doubt we'll get another one. Yeah. But they mean nothing, absolutely nothing.
I've just got the fixtures up here. So you look at Forest's last few games. We've got the Newcastle game that we should have had a penalty for on a 1-1. Then the West Ham game that we should have had a penalty on. Williams, obviously, we won that game. Villa, I don't think there was any controversial decisions, but Manchester United, we had the free kick that was pretty much a carbon copy of the Liverpool goal that was chalked out. And then we had Liverpool last week. We don't need to comment on that. And then this today. And it is every single week. And I don't know what Mark Clattenburg's role in this is. And we saw a different reaction to the incidents this time from Nuno and Gibbs-White. Both of them have came out after the match pretty firm on their sort of slander on the PGMOL, where last week Nuno wouldn't comment, refused to comment, and in the pre-match he did. But it looks like this has really got to Forest's head, and rightly so, because it's a repeated incident that keeps happening, Adam. So what did you make of what was said after the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of funny, because I think Clattenburg was actually brought in to be the ambassador for the club to come out and say stuff because he can, whereas yeah, players and management can't really. So I think that's actually what Clattenburg's role is. I mean, we could go back even further with some of the decisions, by the way. The Bournemouth game, there was two. Never a red card, definitely a penalty. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's where it gets frustrating. I don't blame Nuno or Morgan Gibbs-White for coming out after the game and getting angry. You know, Morgan saying it's getting ridiculous, it's every week and all that sort of stuff. And Nuno saying we don't want any apologies. You know, we don't want that. We just want... And I think that players and managers should be able to come out and say this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when you've got a referee... what's he got? A referee liaison officer or whatever you want to call him, right? When you've got him in the building, maybe just say to... When they ask you a question, just say no comment and let him deal with it. I don't actually know what Clattenburg can do, and I don't think he can do anything, in the sense that nobody can do anything. The decision is made, the decision's done, it is what it is. But we can't afford, as much as I'm frustrated, as you're frustrated, the players, management, everyone involved around the club's frustrated, we can't have this be an excuse for performances. We have played well, and the games we've played well that it's cost us, fair enough. Today, from obviously what I've seen, what, you know, whatever, the performance wasn't good enough either. But you would have liked the opportunity with 10 men for 25 minutes, wouldn't you? You would have liked the opportunity at the very least.
Yeah, I think you're right, Adam. And Forest have had apology after apology from the Premier League. And I think they've just given up, and rightly so, because what do apologies change? They acknowledge that the decisions are wrong, but you're not going to get anything out of it. And we don't want to go down the narrative of saying that there's a bias, that the Premier League's corrupt, but there were chants in the away end about the Premier League being corrupt. And it's hard to disagree with that at the minute because, like I mentioned the games earlier, the constant things that go against Forest, it's getting out of hand and absolutely ridiculous now. And Nuno and Gibbs-White, like you said, we shouldn't have came out and said, and with the raw reaction that they did. But Clattenburg can give his sort of media-trained answer. But Forest just need it to be right. And they're just going to do everything they can to try and get things to go in their favour. And not even that, just for the right decision to be made, because it's outlandish and it's clear what's going against Forest. And it's like the whole stadium can see what's wrong with it, but the man in the middle can't. It just baffles me sometimes. But yeah, I think we've spoken enough about that. So we'll skirt away from the referees and just touch on the game finally, because it was a very flat game and a very flat atmosphere actually around the Amex. And Forest could have pounced on that, should have pounced on that, and just absolutely didn't. So I'm not really sure what the answer was to that game. But we'll move on and look ahead to Kenilworth Road next week, because that just looks like a playoff final, Adam, doesn't it? Forest are 17th with 24 points, just three ahead of Luton in 18th. And it is almost like a promotion playoff, although it's the other way around, because whoever loses is very likely to get relegated. So how do you see Forest coming through that and trying to get a point or a result?
I mean, I want to be positive. I want to say that we've got enough quality to go there and beat Luton, but I don't know at the minute. And I think the reason I don't know is because they've just got a bit more fight in them. Yeah, they just seem to want it a bit more than we do. And, you know, Kenilworth Road's not the easiest place to go. And, you know, they've not made it a fortress. I think matches, someone saying last week they made it a bit of a fortress, I think is a bit over the top. But
they are
playing well at home. And I think they are playing better at home. And as much of a must-win as must-win is. Because you look at it this way, right? We're 3 points above Luton at the minute. They've got a game in hand. And we could potentially, from what you read, get a three-point deduction. It seems like if we get a deduction, it'd probably be 3 points. So they win their game in hand and we get beat by them. That puts us in a very, very perilous situation. So we have got to win. We need to avoid defeat to stop them winning. No. It's a, we need to win this game of football next week. There is no ifs, buts and maybes about it. We've got to win. And I've just got to hope that we can pull a performance out like we did against someone like West Ham, or like we did against Liverpool, or like we did against Man U, but against a worse side, and hope we can pull a performance like that out. But I don't know. And I'm hoping more than I am anything else.
And I'm looking about how to approach it as well, because Forest could go one or two ways. They could play sort of Yates in midfield to grit and determination and win the ball back, and Marshall at the back four, Bolly at the back, maybe to come in and head some corners away, because we know how much of a threat they are from set pieces. And Forest are awful at that. The set piece coach is on gardening leave, although I don't know what he really did anyway. Or Forest can maybe approach it how they did at Brighton, playing ball-playing players like Danilo, Dominguez, maybe hopefully putting Elanga and Hudson-Odoi back in the side just to add a bit of threat. And then up front, I think I'd stick with Chris Wood, because I think he looks like our most informed, our most confident striker at the minute. And like I mentioned earlier, I think he is the only player that could come out of the Brighton game with any sort of credibility, because from minute one, we had kickoff, we played it up there, and Wood won a header, and you could see his presence that we've been missing, because Tyrus came back, but if we're being honest, hasn't really looked fit and looked sharp enough to start. And then, I don't know what the other alternative is, but later on in the game, Wood was sprinting down on the 85th minute and closing players down. And after not playing for six weeks, is it something like that? He's been out to come in and play pretty much the whole game. I was very impressed by him. So how would you approach the game, Adam?
I think I'd probably keep Wood in. You know, before his injury, he was absolutely essential for us. I probably would keep Wood in, but I would surround that with Hudson-Odoi on one side, Langer on the other side, and I'd probably go for, against Luton, I'd probably go for Danilo and Dominguez. I think that probably gives you the best balance in midfield. And I think defensively, I think it sort of picks itself a little bit. I think Nico Williams has to start. He's been one of our best players recently. Left back, I'd still go Toff for me. I think the centre back one's a more interesting discussion, isn't it? Because I think Omar Bandelli got back in the team today, and I really like him. I think he's been fantastic when he's played, but I felt a bit harsh on Felipe. If Felipe's fully fit, I maybe would have gone with Felipe today. I probably would definitely go with him against Luton. I think it's his type of game. And then obviously Matt Sells in goals again. But I think the way we've got to approach the game is we've got to try and score goals early. You know, get 1-0 up, get 2-0 up, make them come at us, let us catch them on the break again. I think that's the key in that game. But what we can't do, what we can't afford to do, is give them any respect whatsoever, because we are a better team than them, and we have to emphasise that.
Yeah, and I think everyone hates the cliche six-pointer, but it does seem very, very relevant. And you're going to make sure that you'll be able to watch that, Adam, and not have any Mother's Day plans, yeah?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Honestly, I woke up this morning, yesterday, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, if I watch the Forest game tomorrow, you know, and, you know, happy days, sorted, whatever. And then it's like, oh, you know, it's Mother's Day. I was like, oh. I was like, no worries, that's fine. I'll go, you know, I spent the day with my mum and all that sort of stuff. But no, next Saturday, I will be watching. Unfortunately, couldn't get tickets, but I think we all knew that Luton away was going to be the lottery. I went when Sammy Amiobi scored the other year.
Yeah.
It's definitely it's an experience of a ground. If you've not been and it is your first time going this year, enjoy it. It's a proper old school football ground.
Thanks, Adam. It will be my first time, so hopefully I'll enjoy it. Yeah, and luckily I go to football with my grandma, so that was my excuse for Mother's Day football. But I think we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining me, Adam, and thank you, listener. Make sure you follow 1865 on all the social media. If you go to the words 1865.football, you'll find all the links there. We'll be back with the Friday Five later on in the week, and hopefully a more positive match report next week after the Luton game. But until then, have a great week, and it's goodbye for us. And I got back at 3 a.m. like last night. Just needed a performance today. Didn't bloody happen.
Sports Social Podcast Network.